So I've got a question for all the video game lovers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance, so I'd visit alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
This week on Retronauts, we find productive ways to hit each other with hammers. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey. And this week, we're talking about the Mario and Luigi RPG series. Yes, it's the Mario RPG series that never strayed too far from its chosen genre. And yes, Paper Mario, I'm looking at you. So after about a decade without a new game, it's back. And though no one really seems to care anymore, we're going to figure out if we should care. That's going to be the point of this episode. Should we care about this series that takes about 6 to 8 years off between games at this point? Before I go on any further, let's see who's with us today. Who is our first guest?
It's Mike Drucker, King of Kings.
King of Kings, author of Good Game, No Rematch, in stores now.
That's right. It is a comedy book about me playing video games throughout my life from childhood to today and how I've humiliated myself with them. So if you've ever wanted to hear about someone getting shot in the nuts at Nintendo of America headquarters with a paintball gun, this is probably the only book that will feature that.
That's right, and these games have very good localizations, and Mike actually worked on a few, and I'm sure that will come up in our discussion, for Nintendo specifically.
That's right.
And who else is here with us today?
Hello, it's me, Stuart Jip, and I do not have the blow-ups. This is just what I look like.
I see. So, Stuart, you don't have access to the vast array of Mario and Luigi powers.
Unfortunately, no. I can only go under the ground, and I can't come back out again. It's really unfortunate.
Well, I'm replaying the first game now, and I don't want bean fever, whatever that is. You eventually turn into a bean. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, so I guess bean fever most summers, actually.
Bean fever does sound like a British condition.
Yeah, it really does, yeah.
The focus on beans is really put on the back burner, let's say, after the first game. They're very bean-focused with this first game. We'll get to it. But before I go on any further now, I want to know where we're all coming from when we talk about this series. What's our history with Mario and Luigi? Let's start with Mike.
Sure. I would say not. I used to be a big fan of the series in the sense that something turned me off of the series, but I haven't played Brothership and I didn't play the remakes, but I was a huge fan of the originals as they came out. I think I just sort of petered off towards the remake era.
And Stuart, how about you?
I've played all of them. I love the first one. We'll get into obviously the different ones in some more detail, but I've played all of them all the way up to Brothership, but I haven't finished all of them, mostly because one of them is so dreadful that I had to just stop. We'll get to that though. But I would call myself a fan, despite the fact I like mainly about three of the games, and I only kind of like one of the three that I like. So it's still a fan.
I think I like two of these games because it's a real case of diminishing returns. Yeah, as for me, big Mario RPG fan, the original game. I did a podcast about that game and the remake. I played through it over and over again just because it's like a 12 to 15 hour game. It's so digestible, so fun. The music is so great. So Paper Mario I did enjoy, but when this came out, I thought, okay, now we're talking. This is a real Mario RPG. It feels like a true successor to the game I really liked. And I really enjoyed that first game. And then, as you were saying, Stuart, as time goes on, they start to wear on me a bit. I really love the third game. And then I kind of am tapped out a bit during the 3DS era, except for one I review, and then I didn't play Brothership. So I am really on and off, hot and cold with this series. But when it hits, it really hits, I'll say. But when it misfires, it can be very tedious, very boring, and just you're wishing it was a Paper Mario sometimes. And I don't even like half of the Paper Marios. So I have a really complicated history with Mario and RPGs together. But like I said, when they're good, they're really good.
Out of curiosity, did you like the RPG remake, Bob?
I loved it. I thought it was amazing, very well done.
Yeah, I loved it too.
And I recently played the Dragon Quest III remake, and I thought, I wish the amount of love went into this that went into that Mario RPG remake, because it just, the Dragon Quest III remake was $60, and it did not feel like $60 worth of my money went into the development of that game. It felt a little cheap to me, even though I did enjoy it and did enjoy the refinements.
I absolutely agree. Like, I liked the Dragon Quest III remake, but like, I still somehow feel like the Game Boy Color version is my favorite, and that should not be the case when you do an HD 2D remake of something.
Yeah, weirdly enough, Star Ocean 2, a game with maybe 5% of the audience of Dragon Quest III, has a much better remake than Dragon Quest III. I don't know how that happened, because I think Square Enix published both of those games, so I don't know. But the Super Mario RPG remake, fantastic. I did an episode that covers that and the Resident Evil 4 remake, so check that out in the archives. Both really good remakes. So before we go on any further, I want to cover Alpha Dream. So Alpha Dream is the now defunct developer that existed from 2000 to 2019. So a 20-year run is not bad for a video game developer in this very harsh environment that video games exist in. And I want to talk about the people who founded this development studio. And when I mentioned who they are and where they came from, their resulting games will really make a lot of sense. So those people are Tetsuo Mizuno and Chihiro Fujioka. So Tetsuo Mizuno is not just some guy. He was the president of Square from 1992 to 1998. So he oversaw this golden age of RPG development that we can't stop talking about. Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger, you name it. FF7, it came out in this very golden era for Square. And I'm sure he had a lot of creative input on like what games were being greenlit, what platforms were being supported, and so on. If you look at his history, he is kind of like a business guy for the most part. But I think what he oversaw really speaks to his performance as a company president. And yes, he is more of the suit of the team. I'm not sure he worked on any games directly, but I really couldn't find any info about that. The other person, though, is more of a hands-on developer type, and that is Chihiro Fujioka. So we understand how Mario & Luigi is the way it is because this guy is one of the two directors of the original Mario RPG. And before that, he worked on other weird Square games like Final Fantasy Legend 3, Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, and I'm a big fan of that one too. It's a very weird game. It's not what you expect.
That was my first Final Fantasy. That like my sister got it for me for like my 11th birthday because it was on sale everywhere because no one wanted it. That was my first. That might have even been my first JRPG.
Really good music too. Yeah. It's fun. I think we've all come around on that. But this guy worked on a lot of weirdo stuff, and it feels like Mario RPG was his first seat in the director's chair. Because if you look at the staff of that game, it was a lot of new people that Square were just pushing onto a project, presumably because they were kicking off development or deep in development of FF7, and they didn't want to put a lot of key talent on a game that was being published by a company they were distancing themselves from. This is the era in which they were like, Nintendo, go away. We like Sony and discs now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy is a fun weirdo. So I believe after Mario RPG, he goes to a developer called Lovedalik with Super Mario RPG associate Kenichi Nishi. Now, Stuart, do you have any familiarity with this developer? They only made three games, but they're all really bizarre.
I mean, familiarity, can you even say? I don't know if I can say I even have familiarity having played some of these games, but I know about Moon Remix Adventure, RPG Remix Adventure, which is this, it's like a quasi kind of real-time, like, almost conflict-averse sort of RPG about making connections, and that came out, I think, on, I want to say PS1.
PlayStation 1
in English for the longest time. I think it's been out for a little while. It's in the notes here. It's been out for about 5 years now. And I absolutely cannot remember what the follow-ups are. LOL something, Lack of Love, I think that's
Lack of Love. And I believe the other one is DNA?
Yeah.
It's called DNA? Yeah.
Oh.
But I don't know much about those because I don't believe they've been localized. They might be fan translations, but I haven't played them, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think one of them is at least a weird life sim kind of a game that's just very bizarre and esoteric. But One of their games is Moon RPG Remix Adventure, and that did get localized in 2020. I believe it's on... I played it on Switch, but now I believe it's on Steam and other things. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool... It's a parody of Dragon Quest in RPGs, but it takes the form of an adventure game that operates on a clock, sort of like Majora's Mask, and there are 7 in-game days, and the same things happen on every day, and you have to sort of plan your adventure gaming around the different events in the game. And it's such a unique game. It can be kind of hard to get into at first because your resources are so limited, but I had a lot of fun with it during like deep pandemic times. So I think it's a lot of fun. And then you see these guys would go on to form Onion Games, who they also make a lot of weird stuff, mostly for Steam and Switch and things like that. So Love Delict did not really go away in any way, but you can see like the weirdo developers of Mario RPG went on to make this weirdo development company that only made 3 games, and people didn't like them because they were too weird. And then Moon RPG Remix Adventure would later be very fundamental in informing things like Undertale and Deltarune. I know Toby Fox took a lot of inspiration from that game. So we're still talking about Fujioka, and while at Alpha Dream, he worked on all the Mario and Luigi games in various roles, and now post-Alpha Dream, he is credited on the latest Mario and Luigi game, and he's credited on Hironobu Sakaguchi's most recent RPG, Fantasian, which, if you didn't know, that used to be an Apple arcade exclusive, and they recently made a port for Switch and PS5 and Steam and everything, so you can now play that if you don't have an iPhone. And from what I hear, it's pretty good. And I'm a Last Story and Blue Dragon guy.
Yeah, it is the closest I've felt to an old PlayStation 1 Square RPG. Now, I'm not saying it's like one-to-one the exact same thing, but like if you kind of miss that era of like FF7, 8, and 9, it feels like that feels like sort of like a almost like road not taken for the series.
Yeah, and I believe Uematsu does the soundtrack for that as well. So there's a, kind of like a hidden soundtrack by him in a recent game, and he's kind of retired now. So it is a pretty monumental there. So what else has he done? Well, it sounds like he's still tight with his former Square pals. In fact, he's the drummer for Earthbound Papas, Uematsu's possibly defunct band. So he didn't really... I mean, it feels like these guys were just like goofing around after work and they formed a rock band and they did stick together, but there's been no releases in over a decade. So Uematsu had the Black Mages, and I guess Earthbound Papas was the next band. No relation to Earthbound, weirdly enough, even though there's a lot of Earthboundiness in these Mario and Luigi RPGs.
Yeah. Also, Uematsu, I think, recently released a specially written piece of music for Sakaguchi's grandson.
That's true. That's true. For the birth of his grandson. So now he is a grandfather. And I guess he has not fully retired yet, it sounds like. I think is making his last game, or at least he says he is. So this is not essential information, but I wanted to throw this out there because it is interesting. Alpha Dream's origins are very strange. The company began as a staffing agency for a construction company called Alpha Star. That was the name of the company. And in 1999, I guess this staffing company said, "Oh, video games are big. Let's fund video game development," which is a very Japanese thing. If you look at the Famicom boom, it was like, "Oh, a record label wants to make video games," or like I believe Taito was an electric company or something, or Kemco,
like that,
one of those. There's so many stories of this weird little company said, "Let's hire 8 guys to make a Famicom game," and this is still kind of happening in the late 90s. I think development costs are way too high to do this today, but it was still happening then. So in any case, Alpha Dream was spun off from Alpha Star in July of 2000. They kept the Alpha part of their name to, I guess, recognize their roots, or maybe it was mandatory. But it does work into a great little play on Final Fantasy, because we have Final Fantasy. What's the opposite? Alpha Dream. So I guess that's something. I don't think Dream is the opposite of Fantasy, but there's some ties there.
Is it one of those things where in Japanese that makes a little more sense as sort of like a reversal pun?
It could, but I also think they were just stuck with Alpha and they were trying to find something clever to do with it.
I guess
Alpha Dream.
I don't think I would ever have figured that out unless you told me. Like, I don't think I would ever have clocked that in my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, when Sakaguchi made The Last Story, I was like, okay, I get it. Final Fantasy, The Last Story. But this is the connections are a little more tenuous here. So Alpha Dream gets their feet wet with the Game Boy Color Pokemon-like called Kotto Battle. Nobody has really played this. Nobody's really heard of it. But Alpha Dream really provided their Mario RPG proof of concept with the 2002 game Tomato Adventure. It is a Game Boy Advance RPG that at the time, a lot of Game Boy Advance fans were really crowing at Nintendo to localize it, but they never did.
Are there fan translations?
Yes, there was a fan translation very, very recently, yes. 2021. So if you want to see what Alpha Dream did before Mario and Luigi, fans have translated the game. And if you look at the game, it looks a lot more primitive because apparently it started as a Game Boy Color game and Nintendo said, hey, we've got this new system coming out. Make port this to that. The Game Boy Color is kind of dead, although not really. But you can see if you watch a long play of it, which I did, I was skimming through it. You can see there's very similar Mario and Luigi stuff. Like the battle system is all about timed commands and there's fun stuff happening on the overworld. And it's just like a very goofy, silly game with vegetable people. And the vegetable people will kind of creep into Mario and Luigi, but they won't really last long because I think Nintendo really put their foot down on the use of OCs.
Yeah.
No more vegetables. Just like absolutely not having any of it. Harvest is
we'll find,
I remember seeing this game in magazines back in the day, and I think it looks great. It has that sort of pastel look of Mario RPG, you know. Mario and Luigi. But then it never did get localized, and for some reason, I always thought it was something to do with Princess Tomato and Salad Kingdom, that NES game. But it's absolutely nothing to do with that whatsoever. There's only a through line of Tomato.
They never followed up Princess Tomato.
Listen,
but,
you say tomato, we say tomato. We'll call the whole thing off.
Oh, that's true. I guess some people do say tomato. Okay. Mm-hmm. The song is correct. But yeah, I found that through doing research on these RPGs, Nintendo loves to become the fun police with their games. And I understand they want to keep things on brand. But I think whenever they look at an NPC in these games, they ask the developer, can't this be a toad? Why is this not a toad? Everyone you talk to should be a mushroom person. And that's just kind of how things go. They're allowed to make their first game with weird NPCs, but then Nintendo's like, everyone's a toad now, okay? That's just the edict we're giving you.
Having been inside there, though, I know how much detail they focus on each individual character, so I can imagine them being like, we do not need 20 new pages to this style guide.
Yeah, I can see
how
that.
How tall this character is, what pronouns to use for them, if there are different genders of this, or if it's just one gender that has the same pronoun, like Bullet Bill. They are detailed in those style guides.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of design, there's kind of like a Toad template. You can kind of stick things on it to make it a new character. And then if you have a new character that's wholly from original ideas, you have to like design everything from scratch, get a lot of approvals, things like that.
That was like a criticism that sort of came around with like the Paper Mario Sticker Star, Color Splash, etc. I mean, I'm a defender of those games, and even I will not defend that aspect of them. Really, I don't understand why they did it. I do, and it does creep into this series as well. Although it's a little bit of a slower kind of an infection until you get to like Paper Jam, and then it's full tilt. Toads everywhere.
Yeah, you're just collecting them. You're finding them everywhere. You're talking to them. It's a real toad fest. We're still talking about Alpha Dream, by the way.
Yeah.
So the end of their story is not great. So we cut to the chase. They file for bankruptcy in October of 2019. Apparently, just as development for Brothership is really getting off the ground. And my own speculation, knowing what I know about the games industry, is it looks like they were having issues getting the budget they needed for Mario and Luigi games after Dream Team. So Paper Jam feels like a real reuse of assets, even though there's a lot of original content in that game. And then after Paper Jam, we have two remakes that show up very, very late. They are on the 3DS after the Switch launches. And even though I was a weirdo playing my 3DS, once the Switch launched, everyone just kind of chucked theirs in a closet or perhaps a garbage can. Not knowing that every game they didn't play, it now costs $300, unfortunately. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when the Metroid 2 remake came out on 3DS, and I was like, I'm really playing, I'm spending a lot of time on this 3DS, and my Switch is right next to me. Like, they actually have some good games that came out on the 3DS towards the end.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of great games, like 2017 to 2019, but unfortunately, like I said, 3DS eShop is down, and now if you want a cart, for whatever reason, these games now cost hundreds of dollars, so it's a real bad situation.
There's no other way to get them whatsoever.
No. Don't bother looking. No one has figured it out yet. So yes, they probably shouldn't have died, but the good news is that some legacy Alpha Dream talent found their way onto the development of Brothership, which was developed by Acquire, and Acquire co-developed the Octopath Traveler series. So they have experience with good RPGs, and we can talk about Brothership towards the end of the podcast. Spoilers, I have not really played it yet, although I did buy it to support the series. I'm hearing it's not super great. But also, one thing about Alpha Dream, if you, for some reason, like the Hamtaro games for the Game Boy Advance, and from what I hear, those were very good for kids, they had a big hand in developing those as well. So, and I think those are kind of like RPGs in their own way, like kind of parodies of RPGs.
I don't know why, really, but I played Rainbow Rescue back in the day. I have no idea why I even picked it up at all, but I got obsessed with that game. There's so much in that game that made me... It's really funny. Like, the comedy is really amusing in that game, kind of like in Mario and Luigi. But it's mostly just kind of mini games, but they're good, and it looks beautiful. I really did enjoy Rainbow Rescue a lot.
Yeah, I think I started emulating one of their games back in college. But as I got a few hours in, I thought, I am in college. How much time do I want to devote myself to playing this Hamtaro Game Boy Advance game? And I quickly moved on to other things that were in no way more mature, but didn't make me feel shame.
that's me. I'm like, yeah, I'm not playing this. Tears it away and starts playing Sonic. That's me every day.
Give me the mature Mario world any day. So yeah, that is Alpha Dream. They existed for 20 years, and they mainly made these Mario and Luigi RPG games. So we are going to break down each of the individual games, but because they have a lot in common, I wanted to first talk about some generalities, what makes these games special, what makes these games stand out from other RPGs, and especially from Paper Mario. So we're going to talk about all of the different elements that are unique to this series. So the first thing I want to start with is the unique control scheme. So in this series, you control Mario and Luigi as a team, and in the overworld, the controls are always very consistent throughout the games, except for the last one, apparently, and I guess we'll talk about that at some point. So, A button makes Mario jump, B button makes Luigi jump, and this central concept feeds into how the games are designed. So, but in both the overworld and in battle, A controlling Mario and B controlling Luigi is fundamental to kind of everything you're doing, and this can feel a little awkward at first, but soon you will understand that, like, A is Mario button, B is Luigi button. And it was also a good way to get around the limitations of the Game Boy Advance because there were only so many buttons on that thing. Did anyone else have issues adapting to this when this idea first came out? Because when you're in the overworld, often, you know, Mario or Luigi can fall off the ledge in front of you or behind you. You have to, like, go back and get them. They find a good way to keep them kind of, like, stuck together at the hip so it's not, like, an escort mission. But it can still be kind of hard to wrap your head around, okay, I have to jump with both characters or jump one character and then the other character in certain areas of the overworld.
It's surprising. I think it's surprising how quickly you do get used to it because it is so unique to do that. But I mean, it's like you'll find when you're jumping across gaps, for example, initially you might be like, I'm going to be clever and I'm going to press A and B at the same time. And that very rarely works. So you really have to learn. It's A, then B, very rapid succession. It is an odd maneuver, but I think you do get used to it. It gets awkward when you're using the shoulder buttons and such to switch around who's in front, who's behind, who's using what on who. That can get a bit confusing. But the basic movement, I think, is pretty easy to pick up, and it's pretty compelling because it means just getting around is slightly more interesting than it needed to be, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think going back to your point, like the fact that the controls were so simple on the Advance, it wasn't like playing Red Dead Redemption where I'm trying to get on my horse but I punch it. I know that these two buttons only do these two things, and that made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah, and because of this control scheme, the overworld is littered with like little mini games to do. We'll talk about how you explore it later, but I was catching up with Superstar Saga Remake earlier today, and I remember, like, oh, when on the overworld, there are coin blocks where when you hit it, it starts a minigame where it, like, goes back and forth between Mario and Luigi. You have to work out hitting the block back and forth, or this one will kind of, like, jump back and forth between them randomly, and you have to make sure you're hitting it with the right character. Just, they're finding new ways to make hitting a block more interesting, which is something that the original Mario RPG really didn't do or didn't attempt. So we have the unique control system that all the games are built around. We also have a really cool battle system with timed hits. So Mario RPG introduced this concept, though the player had to determine the best window in which to hit the button an extra time, and that was mainly through trial and error. You kind of have to figure it out. There were no prompts on the screen letting you know, hit the button now. Here, they're more essential, which means if you screw up, you are penalized. You either miss your attack entirely, or you do your attack for way less damage. And also, dodging is part of the battle system as well. in Mario RPG, the original game, you could hit the button, time it out, so you kind of like duck or shield yourself to guard yourself from incoming blows. In this game, you jump or you hit back enemies with your hammer depending on their attack. And this is also essential. You kind of have to do this every time or else you will be dead in battle. So in this case of attacking and defending, time hits are a necessity this time around.
It's interesting how they make everything pivot around the A and B buttons controlling each brother, and it becomes so second nature that you're just there isn't forgiving, especially the first game. It's very punishing at times, but it's interesting how just how many variations they come up with on how you're dodging, you're attacking, and you're counterattacking by, if you're careful, you're landing on the enemies as they attack you and getting another extra hit in. It's just a really satisfying system, I think, especially in those early games before they start. They just start adding things.
Yeah.
I think, because this was a trend, I think, maybe even starting with Mario RPG, but I remember a couple RPGs in this era that started to be like, oh, if you hit the button at the last second, you'll do extra damage. That did some weird psychic damage on me, where even RPGs where that's not the case, I will still reflexively try to hit button again
before
a strike.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
I was doing that before the first Mario RPG when I was playing Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior.
Cool.
In my head, I thought, like, if you hit the button now, you'll do extra damage. So I think they were just adapting their games to the way people were magical thinking their way through RPGs.
Yeah. Hit down and B when the Pokeball closes, it works.
Yes. I haven't played a Pokemon game in a while, but I still, when the ball is shaking, whatever timing you have to do or that you think you have to do, it feels like it works for me.
Yeah.
It's interesting in that respect, because kids and players would do it anyway, making it something that's actually functional is quite rewarding, you know, the dopamine hit, because you are actually getting results from something you would probably be doing anyway. That's a very Nintendo thing to do, I think.
Absolutely.
And, I don't know how you guys feel about this in terms of how it relates to Paper Mario, but they each go their own way. They each technically have time hits of their own. But in Paper Mario, it feels like things kind of shut down more when it's time to attack the enemy. Here, it feels more like an organic integration of using time hits for battles. So, like, if you do use your special attack in Mario or Paper Mario, you kind of feel the mini game prison bars slam down on you, and it's like, okay, now I'm trapped in this mode instead of just like, oh, I have to tap the A button now or the B button now. It feels more like a distinct mode you're entering.
For sure. It's like in Paper Mario, for example, you're holding left on the unlock stick, releasing to hit the hammer. If you're getting attacked, you're pressing A to block and reduce damage. But here it's like, you'll have like a Paragumba or a Paraspiny or something. He'll swoop at you, so you'll jump, but then he might swoop back high and fake you out into jumping into it. They find just so many, like I said, so many different ways of making it interesting through so many different enemies that it can't help. But I think it's the most dynamic battle system they've ever done in Mario RPG, and that's not me criticizing Super Mario RPG, which has great combat, but it's more of an extrapolation of the turn-based sort of Final Fantasy thing than this is. This doesn't feel like Final Fantasy at all. It's its own thing. Nothing has ever really tried to imitate it that I can think of.
And replaying a bit of the first game, I did notice just how well things ramp up. The areas are pretty small, and by the time you get to the end of an area, you will have internalized what all the enemies do in all of their various attacks, and how they can kind of fake you out sometimes, how they'll use certain techniques to kind of obscure the screen and make you not know which brother they're going for. I like how the game kind of keeps you on your toes in that way. And then the boss battles are a big challenge. Like, can you internalize all of these things within the context of one battle? And can you make it to the end with all of your hit points and flower points? Are they bros points? What are the points in this called?
I thought it was flower points, but I honestly can't remember. And I've actually
played
it again. I still can't remember anyway.
Let's call it magic.
Yeah.
And then you have these team-up duo attacks where they're essentially QTEs where you have to perform all of the inputs when prompted. And I did not look up a playthrough of the first Superstar Saga, but I feel like in that game, there were a few hidden prompts you could put in to do a little bit of extra damage that weren't explicit. Like, oh, you feel like, oh, if I hit the B button here, maybe something extra will happen, and it did. But they removed that from future games to make it more like you either do it right or you do it wrong.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the future games in brief, but it's like, initially, you can set the difficulty, so to speak, so it will be that you get full prompts and slow down when it's time to hit the button, or it will be like, there aren't any prompts, and you just have to remember when to do it, and that's how you do the most damage. The more you use them, the more powerful they'll become. They might add new steps to them. You know, it's an interesting system.
And they're just fun to watch. They find fun ways to have the bros interplay with each other. And a lot of this game is slapstick humor, so they're often, like, throwing each other around or knocking each other around with hammers. So they find, like, cartoony fun things you don't mind watching 100 times when you're using these over and over and over again.
It almost, like, in a way, because I remember as a kid, I was probably in college when I played this. Jesus. There was almost something about it that reminded me of the old Super Mario cartoons. Because like Stuart's saying, it did feel like, I mean, obviously every Mario game, they're going on an adventure. But this did feel like they're going on a wacky adventure where they're, like, bumping into each other and, like, they're getting in each other's ways. And it kind of reminded me of, again, being a kid and watching the Mario series when those characters were a little more fleshed out.
Yeah, I think it gave the brothers more personality than they'd had in a long, long time. And the interactions with one another were nice as well, because Mario and Luigi don't interact with each other that much in the games sort of prior to this, really. And when they do, it's usually just, like, to jump on each other to bounce off and get a coin or something. But in this, you can... I mean, Luigi's got his personality. I think this must have been formative outside of, like, Luigi's Mansion for Luigi's personality.
Oh, yeah.
And who he is.
Big time. Yeah, that's something I really noticed when I first played this game. Just things are maybe like a 15% askew when it comes to how they look and how they feel, but it makes everything feel a little spicier, and just the characters are a little more extreme. There's funny animations that reflect that. One of my favorite animations is in battle when one of the brothers is down, technically dead, I guess, and you use a one-up on them. You go over to them and kind of force it into their mouth.
It's so funny, yeah.
I always like, at least smile when that happens, because it's just so, like, twisted.
He doesn't, like, grab the big bulbous nose and, like, pull their mouth open, shove the mushroom in, and then you see it go down the throat, and then they're up. It's very funny, yeah. There's a lot of funny animations. This is a very niche one, but I'm very fond of right at the beginning when the Bowser baddies all line up to get on the Koopa Cruiser, and Luigi is just kind of sort of sifting his way through the crowd so he doesn't get caught up in it. And they've made a bespoke animation for a slightly embarrassed, socially unconscious Luigi that they really didn't need to make.
Because
I love that very much.
We'll talk about how they speak at the end of this little section here, but because they don't really speak English or have any written dialogue, they have to come up with a lot of unique animations for Mario and Luigi as characters, even outside of battle, so they can convey certain things that they're doing. I mean, you get, like, little thought bubbles and cheats like that, but there's a ton of animation in these games.
Yeah, I have always been a fan of... And I like this in Super Mario RPG as well, like the over emoting, the over, like, pantomiming, and then everyone's like, no, we understand what you're talking about. Like,
yes.
That was always very, very charming to me. Like, I didn't mind when Super Mario 64 added, like, you know, Wahoo and I'm Mario, but there's just something, maybe it's because I like old cartoons too, and I know that Mario's partially inspired by those old, like, 1920s cartoons. But I kind of like that, like, again, like, you're acting everything out, you're jumping, like, in Mario RPG, he'd, like, pretend to jump on a cloud and hang midair, and they'd be like, oh, okay, you did this and that and this and that. And that, to me, is such a fun way to tell a story.
Yeah, they found a creative solution to Mario not being able to talk in Mario RPG, where he will mime out what has happened so far, he'll transform into different characters and kind of switch roles, and even though it's so limited as to what they can do, you, the player, understand what he's trying to convey. It's cool.
Yeah.
So yes, let's talk about overworld abilities next. So Mario and Luigi gain various abilities they can perform, which change based on whichever character is currently in the lead. So they're mostly for traversal and obtaining items, but they feed into the series' general sense of humor because Alpha Dream, it feels like they were given a little bit more leeway than other developers in terms of what they could do to Mario and Luigi, and a lot of the abilities are Mario is going to hammer Luigi into the ground, and he will burrow underneath the ground, or Luigi will hammer Mario, and Mario will become small and be able to fit through small gaps, or they'll get on each other's shoulders. There's all of these fun little animations that feed into exploring the overworld, and yes, this is a Mario Luigivania. You can go back to old areas with your new powers and get new items with those powers. So we're going to coin the term here.
As long as we don't call it Metroid Brainia.
Oh, yes.
That is where I draw my line in the sand and quit.
Well, I got a refund on the blueprints after 3 hours, so I reject that term wholly. I'm sorry, everybody else. I can't do it. I just can't do it. I gave it a good try.
I liked it. I liked it, but I also understand why people are like, hey, you really built this up a lot.
Yes. Also, I was in college for 9 years. I don't need to play the game like this, where I need to, to play the game, buy a notebook. Okay. can't I take notes in the game? No, you can't. No.
I'm not saying it's bad, obviously, that would be insane, but, like, I just know that it's not for Stu, you know, like, if it's, this game's yeah. Like, oh, yeah, this game really, like, this will twist your melon, this will really make you think, I'm out, and I can't, it's not going to be for me, I'm pretty stupid.
Yeah, it was a case of not for me, and it made me feel like a real jock, because I was like, I'll go back to playing Indiana Jones and the Great Circle and smash rocks together.
I think it was for me, but...
Same with the Outer Wilds, just no, sorry.
Oh, no. I think it was for me, but the reason it was for me is because I grew up on games like Myst and Riven, and this felt like a new take on it that I hadn't seen before. But I also can respect coming in and being like, what is this? I know the solution to the riddle, and maybe if the randomly generated deck comes in my favor in 8 hours, I can solve the riddle? Like, I get the frustrations of that.
Yeah, that was my main issue. We're working a little Blueprints review into it.
Yeah, this is
sorry.
Blueprints episode of Retronauts.
It's okay. I've no one to gripe about this to, so I'm among friends here. It's great.
I think there's a part in the first game where you have some blueprints, so that kind of, there you go, there's a connection.
There we go.
And my blueprints is Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm sorry, folks.
Oh, hell yeah. You have my axe.
That was said facetiously. Stuart is really the bigger Sonic fan here, without a doubt.
I'm afraid so, in every
without
respect.
A doubt.
And I'm very, very sick of him.
So I did let everyone know up front that Nintendo is kind of the fun police, and you can see Alpha Dream is having a bit too much fun in this first game for Nintendo's taste, which is why we see they're kind of reined in, really starting in the 3DS era when things get like a little more smoothed out and on model. But especially in this first game, Alpha Dream really put their mark on these two defined characters by giving Luigi these stripy socks, which I completely miss in the future games. Because to kind of put their own stamp on the character, I feel, they make Luigi's overalls like legs a little shorter. And then you can see these great little stripy socks. But I feel like Nintendo said, Luigi does not wear stripy socks. Please check the story Bible. This is not in his character.
What's worse is there was probably a conversation after the game came out to ask, do we want Luigi to wear stripy socks? And there was a very long meeting about that.
There was an all hands that took the entire workday. Multiple PowerPoints.
I feel like they sort of set the tone. And I'm going to be as non-crass as I can about this. By the fact that the first game opens with a Toad seeing Mario's penis and testicles, presumably.
Does he run in on Mario in the shower?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And then he runs out and he like goes all red and his head goes really big. And like, there's only one thing that means, which is he's just seen Mario's junk. And I think that's great. Like, a fantastic opening to a game. Like, allude to the fact that Mario even has genitals. Like, that's crazy.
I think the first and third game, at least, have this real fun gag manga sensibility. They really feel like the Super Mario-kun manga that is still ongoing in Japan. Just like a little bodier, a little sillier. Mm-hmm. The characters can be a little more selfish or stupid just for the sake of a joke. I feel like they were going with that vibe instead of like, oh, Mario is hardworking and trustworthy and Luigi is a coward, but he's still a good brother. Like these very generic traits that are now like part of the CG renders of those characters that they have made
like
defined.
Mario is the hero character, but he's the hero character like at the expense of Luigi's well-being at times. Like at the beginning, he runs out of his house, Luigi is like dragged along with the washing line behind him screaming.
Yes.
It's wonderful. It's so much fun, and I wish that they would do more stuff like it, but
It feels like that maybe they just let this team do what they wanted or there was less oversight or whatever, but I really love how the earlier games feel compared to the later ones.
Yeah.
And this is where Mike can come in, because Mike, you did some localization for Nintendo, I believe. I was looking at your Moby Games credit. Is it just Kid Icarus Uprising and a Mario Party game?
Kid Icarus Uprising, Mario Party game. I also did the localization work on like all the interviews and the... Remember when they did the Super Mario World re-release for the Wii, which felt kind of weird? I did all the localization on all the interviews that came with the booklet. And then when you're there at Nintendo doing localization, one of the jobs that is kind of one of the more fun side jobs you do is everyone will get in a room, all the writers and translators, and they'll put enemies on the screen, they'll put locations on the screen, new characters on like a projector screen, and you're just going around the room pitching ideas for it. And you'll have a translation team being like, this is what it is in Japanese. This is what the developer wants out of the character. This is, like, the character's personality. What should we call him? And it's 2 hours of some of the most fun you can have at Nintendo.
That's great. And I really feel that these games, they do feel a lot like your Kid Icarus Uprising localization, where they're very fun. They're written by people who know what a joke is and know how to be funny. And they really flow well. And in Kid Icarus Uprising, you're not being stopped in order to read the text. It's just kind of flowing as you're going through battle. And I hope one day, we are on the brink of the Switch 2 release, we need to find a new platform for Kid Icarus Uprising, because I played a little bit of it for Retronauts and I really loved it. But if I play any more, I will need surgery. And I'm not
so
willing
hard
to pay that, even in Canada, I'm not willing to pay that price just to play Kid Icarus Uprising. So let's hope for the Switch has a mouse. Switch 2 has a mouse. It's perfect for the game.
There were like rumors, because Sakurai was going to announce his next game at the last Nintendo Direct, and there were rumors it was going to be that, and it dropped and it was Kirby, and I'm the biggest Kirby fan in the world, and I was still quite disappointed when it was Kirby Air Riders. I was like, come on.
I do remember
Kid Icarus.
When I was there, because we were working on Kid Icarus, I remember someone mentioned that Sakurai had been bummed by Air Ride not being like widely embraced like his other games. Like, he sort of felt like the game was misunderstood. So this makes sense to me of him being like, you know what? I'm going to get this one back on the table, and you guys are going to respect it.
You have to let me make this. You know how much of my life I spent making Smash Brothers?
It's only fair. He gave his soul to that.
Let him have this.
I just feel like if he wanted more people to embrace it, he should have made it like less weird. <That's>, you know, you boot it up and it's like, here are the three games. I don't understand.
This is other inside baseball. When we were making Icarus, Sakurai actually did injure his hand because he was testing the game so much.
Wow. Well, damn it. No wonder it shipped with that ergonomic easel.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I wanted to ask you, Mike, Did the writing in games like this really encourage you to get into that field, or did you want to, when you saw writing like that, did you think like, I could write like this, or I want to tell the mushroom people what to say, what to do?
I mean, it definitely, I never thought I'd get a chance to work at Nintendo, so it wasn't like there was a straight line between those games and me getting a job there, but it definitely was like, oh my god, I love that this is funny. Like, when I played the first Mario and Luigi and the first Mario RPG and the Paper Mario, I remember being like, oh, like, these games are funny. And they're funny on purpose. And it's not just like a one-off gag or a silly name. It's like, literally, these games are comedies. And that, to me, was weirdly mind-blowing.
Yeah, to integrate that into something which, in terms of comedy, RPG does not really go hand-in-hand.
Right. Especially at that point. Like, at that point, like, late 90s, early 2000s, when I was just used to these big purple epics that occasionally had a comic relief character that you never put in your party. But it was rare for me to see a game that was just comedy.
Some of the scenarios are so completely insane. I remember like making a save right before this section where you go in. I can't remember the context. You go underground in a cola factory and you find a very old man who's been telling jokes to a barrel of Coca-Cola or something for years and years and years and years to make it taste better. And then the cola comes alive, bursts out of the barrel, and pulls a sword. The man jumps into the air, and like the background goes all kind of pink sparkles, and he starts like waxing lyrical about how wonderful this cola is. And then I'm sort of sitting there like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the boss fight with the cola, because why not? You know, it's just, it's completely crazy, and they definitely toned it down in the subsequent ones.
The part I just played, Mario gets bean fever for some reason. I forget what it is. And Luigi has to go save the day. But in order for Luigi to do a dungeon on his own, he has to be hypnotized into thinking he's Mario.
Yeah.
It doesn't play into any of the mechanics, but just a funny idea. You first have to, like, find your way to the hypnotist, and they make you think you're Mario very briefly so you can actually do something on your own. But, Mike, you were saying, growing up with RPGs, Mike Stewart and myself all understand that for a long time, localizations were not good. And a good localization was still a very novel thing in 2003. I will say, unfortunately, as time goes on with these games, they really indulge in the writing. And now a bad localization is rare. When something has a bad localization or a bad translation, you're like, holy shit, this still happens? But now these games, I feel like they talk a little too much, or maybe just not as special anymore. But going back to 2003, It was very special. And then you have a character who is a parody of bad localizations. Like, Nintendo is admitting, we know where we came from, and Fawful speaks like a game we translated in 1987, essentially.
I mean, yeah, I think that was also like really when the Treehouse was not to use a pun, but like getting its roots in the ground and really figuring things out. So I do think that was like the moment they were like, oh, we can have fun with these. I also think that this is around the time when they were figuring out a system in which they were writing the script concurrently with the game's development.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Because, you know, obviously in the 90s and the 80s, there was a lot of, you know, like with games like Final Fantasy VII that have a famously bad localization, it's because they basically handed a guy, you know, 1,000 pages and were like, can you do this in 2 or 3 weeks? It's already done.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when we were making Kid Icarus, you know, we would get, I'll say new pages, but really it was like new lines in a spreadsheet. But we'd get like new pages from Sakurai, and he'd be like, here's what's happening in the story, here's what changed in the story, here's the mood of the scene, here's what we want out of it. And that makes localizing so much easier when you're working hand in hand with the team than it does when you're sort of like sitting alone in a room trying to be like, okay, is this moment supposed to be romantic, or is it just sort of like sad? Like, what's the vibe of this scene versus being able to ask instantly?
Yeah, getting the context is essential. And at times, working on localizations, you didn't know how much room you would have, because famously Japanese takes up much less space. And in old games, especially cartridge games, even in 2003, expanding all that Japanese could push you over the limit as to what the cart could hold.
Yeah, which again, we didn't really have as much in Uprising because we were sort of just past the cresting of that point. But that was kind of fun, too. I remember, like, I was I didn't work on the last Golden Sun game, but it was in development when I was in the Treehouse, and I remember them like kind of struggling with that, you know, like writing and rewriting and writing and rewriting just to make sure those text boxes fit.
So I really do love story-based games, but I find that these games can get a little talky. In fact, this is not Mario and Luigi, but I just replayed the Paper Mario Thousand Year Door remake. And maybe it's because I had COVID when I was replaying it, but I was getting very, very bored with just how overwritten that game is. And it's a game I thought I really loved, and I still like aspects of it, but that at the time was very novel. Like, it's 2004, and this game reads like a very funny book or a very funny webcomic. But now you're like, I can kind of get this anywhere. So I kind of regret that I'm jaded enough that this does not feel special anymore. But I do want to underline how special it felt to have a game that was this funny and this well-written.
Yeah. You know, I also think that, you know, it was so original that it was like, oh my God, this game is hilarious. But now, you know, we kind of want one or two characters to be the straight man. We don't need every character to have funny one-liners. Like, not every NPC should have the funniest comment. Some should just be, like, freaked out about a situation going on.
Or at least just giving you the information you need instead of you having to page through, like, a big joke to find out where the mountain is.
Yeah.
Which I think is a problem with Paper Mario sometimes. But yes, very good localizations throughout the series. Also, a key element of the series is Yoko Shimomura, a fantastic composer. She put together the Super Mario RPG soundtrack, a really good soundtrack that I think is underrated. And she writes soundtracks for all of these games. They're very good. They're very bouncy. The battle themes are so catchy. And they are a little Kingdom Heartsy, which you can, I guess you can take or leave if you like that series. But I find that these soundtracks don't get enough credit. And she is so legendary and she has done so much. But this feels like people don't regard this in as high as regard as her other work, I feel.
I mean, they're so Kingdom Heartsy that I sometimes get mixed up in my head which songs are from which games. Like, it's I know that, like, some of the level up themes in these games are absolutely astonishing. You just want to leave it on the level up screen just to listen to it. And there's some great music going on here.
And her, just to throw this out here, I know a lot of people played it, but her Final Fantasy XV music is insane. It's so good. It does not sound like her at all. And that's not usually what I ask for. When I want Yoko Shimomura music, I want to hear the bouncy, bubbly, Kingdom Heartsy, Mario and Luigi stuff. But she put together an amazing soundtrack for that Final Fantasy game. She's a key element of the series, but she's not on Brothership. So that's another strike against Brothership. And another element of this series is traditional RPG mechanics. So Mario and Luigi feels a lot more like Super Mario RPG than the Paper Mario series, because Paper Mario is all about small numbers and experimenting with the RPG format, often making your game very not like an RPG at all, with Sticker Star and Color Splash and so on. But Paper Mario, or sorry, Mario and Luigi falls back on very standard RPG elements. You have hit points, you have magic points, you have equipment, accessories. It's not more complicated than Mario RPG, but it's also not being afraid of the RPG status. They're kind of proud of being an RPG, but then they can put the Mario dressing on other elements you recognize from Final Fantasy and other games. I don't know about you folks, though, but I did like Origami King, the Paper Mario game, but Stuart is a sticker star liker.
I'm sorry, I am. That's... I absolutely love it. I love it to death. It's not an RPG at all. It's a Sierra-style adventure game, and I understand completely and without regret why people don't like it. They are fine. I am fine with that. The game, it will drive you crazy, but for me, it's just like, this is driving me crazy. I love this, you know? But yeah, Origami King, I liked, except for the combat. And yeah, the combat ring I did not enjoy, but the everything else, the writing, the jokes, the exploration, I thought was on point. I mean, I didn't going to talking about Mario RPG. I didn't really play RPGs and before. I mean, I wasn't an RPG guy. I'm a Mario guy, which is why I played this. And I feel like these can act, and as they did with me, they can almost be like entry level RPGs because the customization is quite simple. And the story is quite light. I mean, like, the first game is like, what, 10 hours, 15 hours or so? It's not going to waste your time at all. But I went sort of from these to thinking, hey, maybe I could try an RPG and maybe I'll enjoy it. And, you know, I did. So thanks, Mario and Luigi.
On the flip side, I literally remember because I think it did come out maybe my, like, junior or senior year of high school, Super Mario RPG, and there was like one or two guys in my school who were like, that's an RPG for babies. Me being like, come on guys, we're all like 17 here, calm down.
In my school, the question was, what's an RPG? And then / that sounds gay was the other comment, because it was 1995.
I mean, yeah, it's like all my friends were into Final Fantasy VII, and Final Fantasy VII was really cool. But I mean, I was just like, what do you jump on? You don't jump on anything in this. And then finally, this comes along. And, you know, Super Mario RPG, of course, in which you do lots and lots of infinite jumping. It's fantastic. But,
Yeah, I'm not a fan of where Paper Mario went. And I just like that this series is always kind of there for me. They're like, we're an RPG, come into the warming, loving embrace of the RPG. When Paper Mario, they did two RPG games, and they're like, okay, now we're Super Paper Mario. Now, many years later, we're Sticker Star. Now we're Color Splash. And then Origami King is like, we're kind of an RPG again. We're figuring things out. But I like how, even though the games in the Mario and Luigi series feel kind of samey, they do welcome you back with all those familiar elements you kind of want from an RPG. And the last thing I want to mention here is what I call Italian Duolingo. Yes, these games can teach you Italian if you want to be beaten up by a man who runs a pizza restaurant. So Mario was a mute character in Super Mario RPG. He's mute in Paper Mario. But here, in a move that kind of feels inspired by The Sims, I don't know, The Sims was a very big game when these games were in development, Mario and Luigi, they babble in what I would call pseudo-Italian. And I'm going to throw this out there. Maybe it's insensitive. I'm not Italian. I can't speak to this. But I will say, it's always funny. I always think it's funny, and I can't believe they went with this choice, and they didn't deviate from it, even when people could say, well, I don't know if you should be doing this. They kind of stuck to their guns on this very cartoonish pizza box man portrayal of the characters, and it's only in this game series.
Yeah, I think, you know what, maybe what gets a pass on it is it's just that the Italian itself is gibberish, and it's not like they're doing over-the-top Italian stereotypes so much. You know what I mean? Like, it's more like the language is like, and you're like, okay, but it's not like they're like, you know, bringing out a pizza or some like old mom. I don't know. It just feels like it's so cartoony and contained in what it is that they're I don't feel like it's making fun of Italy.
They're not supporting Mussolini.
I mean, we don't know. We don't know what they're saying. But I mean, it's not like, it's not ideal. It's not like Apu, you know. It's not that whole thing. It's just kind of funny, and they probably wouldn't do it now. I can't remember if they do it in Brothership or not, but I mean, Mario's also had that kind of, you know, oh, let's go. He's a bit Italian, kind of, you know. And this sort of just felt like an extrapolation of that, because they couldn't really do full voice clips, so it had to be just like like that. And if me doing that is a problem, please delete it.
No, hey, Mario and Luigi have been getting away with it for 20 years, 20 plus years. Yeah, I feel like it just goes back to the way Charles Martinet, it's Martinet, not Martinet. Is it Martinet?
I believe it's Martinet.
Okay,
it's
Martinet. I always get this wrong.
But they call him Martinet, and I think it is Martinet, because they call him that in future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
We're gonna stick to Martinet, but I feel like he was allowed to define the character back when things were very loose with those appearances at the conventions with the virtual Mario head, and I think that just filtered into this game as well. He's probably in a booth, and they're like, well, what would Mario and Luigi say that aren't words? And he would just do, like, the classic cartoon Italian for them. And they're like, okay, that sounds funny. Let's go with this. Not knowing, like, well, what are the implications of this? Could people be mad about this? But I think there's been very little protest over Mario and Luigi. And then if you look at the characters, they literally jumped off of a pizza box to be your video game pals. So their design is essentially problematic if you want to go that far. But I think they're cute and cuddly and fine.
The thing is, if they started as Italian, they're just Mario and Luigi now. They've gone so far beyond any kind of really, truly recognizable kind of cultural thing outside of their own output, if that makes sense. They're just Mario and Luigi now. But then again, you could make that defense for characters like Apu, and it wouldn't hold water. So goodness knows.
Well, there is a moment in the Mario movie, the recent one, where they briefly do the Mario voices, and the joke is, can you believe if we talked like that? And I thought, I want to see that movie. Can we get that cut? Just the high-pitched Mickey Mouse Italian. I want to kind of see that. It would have enhanced my viewing experience, I think.
I'd forgotten that movie existed, and now I've remembered it, and I'm sad now.
It's been a long 2 years, Stuart.
Yeah.
And I do think the difference between Mario and Apu is that Apu exists in a stereotype that is an Indian people stereotype,
which is
you're an immigrant who runs a corner store, and you have 10 kids, and you're kind of taking up space. And I think that was a little more offensive, whereas, like, it's not really an Italian stereotype that two guys are plumbers. Like, if they were in the mob or something, like, some sort of, like, or if it was, like, just focused on cooking in some weird way, I think it might be more offensive. But it's almost like they're Italian and they're plumbers, but no one's like, ah, oh, man, great, another Italian plumber gut character.
they always keep pasta out of the games. Pasta and pizza and Italian food, they never intersect with the games. It's always like a cartoon or movie thing.
It comes up in Hotel Mario, but nobody cares about Hotel Mario.
I guess that's true.
Disregard.
I mean,
it's not canon.
I forgot about that game.
I hope she made lots of spaghetti.
I guess they retain that element in... I guess they're just borrowing from the cartoons. Who knows? But I can say that I live right within the heart of Vancouver's Little Italy. And I don't see Mario and Luigi. I see a lot of old guys with track jackets and gold chains. So if Mario and Luigi look like that, I could see that's a stereotype and people could get offended. But it's like, they're just guys. They're just kind of out of the Fleischer era and they want to fix your pipes.
And according to Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, sometimes they throw them a flag that's like Saudi Arabia. So, you know, who even knows officially?
Who are they working for?
That game's fast. This is the smallest side note, but that game's fascinating because they'll just randomly assign what country it is. So it'll be like Wario doing flips for France. It's a very wacky game.
So it's also tangentially relevant because I think Alpha Dream worked on at least one of those. So there you go. We're back in.
I think that could be one of their last games. Is the 2020 game? Maybe whatever recent Olympics there was before they shut down. Maybe 2018, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The non-Tokyo one, because they couldn't do that, I think. I don't know.
So I want to move on to talk about the individual games here, and we're just going to highlight what's special about these before we move on to the next one. And it all begins with Superstar Saga, which was released in November of 2003. So Paper Mario comes out in 2001 in America, excites everybody who loves these Mario RPGs. But this game kind of came out of nowhere And like we said earlier, is the successor to the 1996 Square game, Mario RPG. Even Geno makes an appearance. Unfortunately, he's cut out of the remake, but they're just letting you know this is the DNA that is behind this game.
It's the best one. It's not all downhill from here, because there's a big bump up again after we skip the next game.
Yeah, I agree.
This is, for me, this is the best combination of like gameplay, story. It does have its tutorials, but they're not forced so much. They're not as absolutely wearingly long as they are in the later games, and it's all just nicely kind of pared down, and it's very funny. Has the most variety of like locations, enemies, I think. I think has the best, most cartoony, exaggerated look of all the games as well, which the remake ruined, by the way.
I agree, yeah.
The remake sucks, don't even get me started. but this is wonderful, and you can play it on your Switch with the expansion pass right now.
The remake
if you haven't.
Is a bit compromised. The original version, though, I will say, it was a really refreshing RPG. It came out at a time when we just finished the PlayStation era, we were moving into the PS2 era, or we were already in the PS2 era, and this is an era in which RPGs were just so bloated. They were really abusing the CD format and the DVD format. Here we have a 15-hour RPG that, because of the cartridge, it's limited in what it can show you, but it's always showing you something new for that limited runtime. And because of that, you're always seeing new characters, fighting new enemies, going to new locations. It just keeps moving. The pacing is probably the best of any RPG I played outside of the original Mario RPG, which I think is even shorter than this one.
Yeah. I also think that, you know, at that time period, it was interesting. It, like, just even the visual style, because, you know, you're used to grim dark JRPGs or ones that sort of had more of an anime aesthetic. And this was a JRPG that had neither of those. It was, like, lighthearted and fun, but it didn't feel like, you know, I was working with 12-year-old witches.
Yes,
like, it kind of had an interesting look and feel for that era.
Yeah, it was. It did feel like it evoked the gag manga of the past, of the 90s. Just, like, kind of, like, squat, funky-looking characters that were very evocative of that style. And this takes place in the Bean Bean Kingdom. We have a lot of vegetable people. I feel like it is the Tomato Adventure legacy. But it also follows the Super Mario RPG tradition of introducing Bowser as a villain, but then he immediately gets stomped by some new big bad who humiliates him. And in this game, Bowser is possessed by the new villain. So he doesn't get to join your team here like he did in the original, which was a really cool choice. But he is more of a sympathetic character because he is so abused and made subordinate.
Quite a lot of this game, he's kind of hanging out with this thief called Popple. And they make a really amusing sort of double act throughout. You'll run into them in a lot of scenarios, and they're usually a very compromised sort of state of failure. it's a lot of fun.
And like I said earlier, Alpha Dream was having a lot of fun with the characters, and I think that is the reason why this is the first appearance of the Koopa Kids or the Koopalings since Yoshi's Safari, which was not even made by Nintendo. Because I love the Koopa Kids, I love the Koopalings. I've got a Larry Koopa behind me somewhere over there. And it felt like Nintendo was really behind these characters in the early 90s, and then they were like immediately done with them, and then we have Bowser Jr., which is another can of worms. Either you like him or you hate him. I might be warming up to him, but still I need another 20 years to figure that guy out. But seeing them in this game was just like, wow, I can't believe it. They're here. There's like Dr. Mario enemies in the game. There's enemies from the original Mario Brothers. They're just having so much fun by shining a light on these dark corners of Nintendo history, characters that they didn't really pull out of storage very often.
It's only a slight shame that the Koopalings are used in as what is essentially a boss rush, although it is still extremely cool fighting all of them in a sort of reasonably quick succession.
Yeah. They're not a major part of the game, but they still designed unique character assets for them and unique battles. Yeah,
awesome fan service that they even show up at all. I remember the excitement online when that became that they were back. It's like, holy crap, it's them. They're not dead.
But they're no longer his children.
Right. Mm-hmm. They had to put that statement out there. We don't know the mother or the father. They're just they're child associates of
Bowser. They just
work
for, yeah. Because if you remember, like, I hate to go back to the Super Mario Super Show, but like or the Super Mario 3 cartoon that followed that.
Yeah.
They like were really his kids to the extent where half of the episodes were them being like, Dad, I want to go to a concert. Like, that was, like, half of that show.
It was real, and like, single dad raising, like, baby boom style comedy.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're back in the game, and there's not much more to mention because we covered all of the main mechanics, and that forms the core of this game. So we have the remake, which was called Superstar Saga plus Bowser's Minions, which launched for the 3DS in October of 2017. It's a good game to remake, not the best time or the best platform, and it's technically a good-looking game on par with Dream Team, the first 3DS game, but it does eliminate a lot of the personality from the original hand-drawn art. And I feel like starting with Dream Team, that's when everything is really smoothed over. That's when everything becomes more on model, more of the house style of Nintendo, and that's where I start to lose interest. But technically, it still looks good, but it does not have any of the style that you like.
It's very good looking. I'll be very brief about it, but basically, I have a big issue with this remake, which is slightly pernickety, I think. But I really hate that they put on the X button to make both brothers jump. Like that, it feels like they had no confidence in their own idea at all. It's like, oh, here's how you play the game, but don't worry about that. You can just press X now. And the whole game kind of feels like that. It's like anything that did have a little bit of any kind of frictional personality, they went, nah, this was wrong, let's fix this, by making everything easier or making everything just more on model. I mean, the one I point to is there's a sequence near the beginning of the game where Bowser is launched into the screen. He hits the screen and then falls back down. If you look at those side by side, you'll see that one of them is an extremely funny cartoon drawing of Bowser's kind of mangled like face into the camera, and the other one is just kind of a normal drawing of Bowser. And it's like, I don't know why. I don't appreciate that much. I mean, it's still Superstar Saga. You can still have fun with it, but I just, other than just to look at it, I don't know why you would play this version if you had the choice. And if you own it, you are now rich. Congratulations.
Thank you. Unfortunately, it's a digital copy, so I don't know what I can do with that. But I'm
going to
squirrel it away for the future until my 3DS dies. But this also comes with a little bonus content. We can talk about it in like 30 seconds because it's not that great. I honestly don't recommend you play it. It's cool that they included more stuff, but it's pretty tedious. So this Bowser's Minions thing is essentially an auto-battler RPG where you assemble a team based on the enemies that you see, and then it plays out automatically. You can send different characters in, and there's a lot of grinding in it. There's kind of too much story for what it is, and I appreciate that they're giving you something extra, but honestly, Superstar Saga is a great game. You don't really need any other side content to make that fulfilling experience. So yes, that is Superstar Saga, a great place to start. And like Stuart said, you can play this on the Nintendo Switch Online service. If you have $1 million, you can buy a cartridge of the remake. But I also feel like the original experience is the best one. So we're going to move on to the next game here. That is Mario & Luigi Partners in Time. It launched for the DS 2 years later in November of 2005. And I feel like this is a real sophomore slump game. And you can tell what the general consensus is about this game because when they were remaking their series, Alpha Dream skipped this one. They're like, one, and then two, now three! So I feel like even they were like, we didn't do a great job on this. Let's forget this happened. What are our thoughts on this one? I could not... Everything in this game just took so long to do that I slipped off of it very quickly. And I was 23 years old with like a part-time college job. I had so much free time for these bad RPGs.
They immediately failed to make a better game, unfortunately. the bros attacks were replaced. I think one of the bigger problems, the bros attacks were replaced with items, and the items are way more boring. They're usually just mashing A and then mashing B, or like there's one where you're kicking a Koopa shell that bounces back, and then the other brother kicks it, and it literally is just A, B, A, B like that. And if you've got like a red shell, that will go on and on until you miss a kick, and it's not that hard to keep doing it. So most of the battles just become like, choose your strongest item, don't mess up the inputs. You're done. But even then, I mean, I played this through right to the end. I got to the final boss, and the final boss, I think I fought it for about 35 minutes, and then I died, and I was like, forget it.
Yeah.
There's literally an 8-minute cutscene at the beginning that you can't skip, and it's just mashing through dialogue. And I just found myself thinking, like, this is not Nintendo. You know, you shouldn't have to do this in a game like this. And also, the writing... It's not bad writing. I think it's trying more to be funny, if that makes sense. They're cramming jokes into every line. And the nadir of it, is that how you pronounce that word? Nadir? The nadir?
I think so.
The low point.
Yeah.
You meet, and this is the most dated thing ever, you meet some Hammer Brothers who speak in Leet speak.
Oh.
They're like, yeah, we are Hammer Bros, we rock saw you, then Ruffle, Lamal. It's like, it, at the time, it's that kind of thing where it was designed to make the internet go, holy crap, we feel seen, and then you go back to it any time now, and it's just, it's cringecore, as the kids would say.
I I'm glad they kept it with one or two of the characters in Persona 3, the remake, because that still takes place in 2009. So I'm like, I get it. These characters talking online would still talk like someone in 2009, and I'm glad you kept that. But I absolutely agree. It's also weird, like, you know, Persona 3 technically takes place in the real world of some sort. It is weird to hear internet speak in a Mario world where we don't quite know what their internet is.
That's true, yeah. Like, where did this come from? I think I recently replayed the first Ace Attorney Investigations game, and I think one of the characters does speak in Leet speak. And in case you're not 40, I can explain what that is. It's go back to the early 2000s, and you can see people, instead of writing the word U, Y-O-U, they put a lowercase J and then two zeros, like Jew. Like, typing everything out with numbers and letters as complicated as possible. L33T speak.
Yeah, it's Mega Tokyo, and nobody wants to be reminded of Mega Tokyo.
Unfortunately, I only think of Mega Tokyo when I think of Leet Speak, and there will be no more questions about Mega Tokyo on this podcast.
It's still going. Anyway,
yes, I can't believe that.
it's that's my issue with this game in a nutshell, really, is it doesn't feel sort of... It feels like I'm putting too much weight on the Samurai Brothers thing, but it isn't just that. It's not timeless. It's too talky. It's too tutorial-y, and it's only going to get more tutorial-y from here. And it's a downer. It's not a horrible game. It's just, I mean, we haven't even talked about the babies, which just means you've got to do everything twice.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I want to get into the babies, and I want an internal investigation to happen at Nintendo. I want to know why they were so focused on babies at this point in time, because for reasons unknown to us, they were going through a real baby area, a baby era in the early to mid-aughts. So Mario Kart Double Dash, full of babies. Yoshi's Island DS, all the babies. This game, it's full of babies. Did something tell them, oh, people love babies? Was Baby Geniuses like this big hit overseas that we don't know about? I don't know, but everybody I know at the time, like a bunch of surly 20-somethings, they hated this crap.
Yeah. Nobody likes babies. Everybody hates babies. It's just another fact. And it's ridiculous.
And yes, Stuart, because of the babies, everything takes twice as long to do because Mario and Luigi are A and B. Baby Mario and Baby Luigi are X and Y.
Yeah. It's like you're always covering the same ground twice. You're sometimes doing the same mini games twice. Adding the X and Y inputs to the combat system so that the X and Y, I think the babies are on your shoulders and they're using the hammers while Mario and Luigi are jumping, it doesn't add anything. It just makes everything a little bit more annoying. I think the real killer is the items that just make the battles take forever and the fact that, as you've mentioned, everything has too much freaking HP. And it's a bummer. It's... Not the villain isn't as good, it's just kind of these boring purple aliens, you know. You'd think it would be exciting to introduce this kind of alien tyrant race into a Mario game, but everything just seems worse. The exploration isn't as good. It's a shame because it looks so nice, it plays so smoothly, but what it's doing is just, it's just not there, and it wasn't till the next game that they course corrected very nicely.
Completely. And my biggest problem with this is it's a time travel story, but time travel mechanically has nothing to do with what you're doing in the game. Like, I love Chrono Trigger, I love Day of the Tentacle, I love games where time travel is a gameplay element and mechanic. Here, it's just to set up the story of how you can interact with your baby self and use yourself in battle, I guess.
And just one final Panegati criticism. There's this one piece of music in this game that they play every single time something dramatic happens, and you hear it 5 or 6 times in the first 10 minutes, and it's like, for God's sake.
Hey, Yoko does not come cheap. Maybe they didn't want to pay her as much for this one.
Yeah, it's a great song, but you don't need to hear it that many times. It's a shame.
So yes, I'm sure there are people who like this game, but it feels like the developers don't really care much for it. And like all of these games review very well, but then after years pass, people are willing to say, well, this wasn't the good one, or this one was very tedious, and this one has a high Metacritic score, but I think most people will agree you can skip this one and move on to the next one, which is very, very good. Bowser's Inside Story came out about 4 years later, so there was a big gap between these games. And I'm going to say this is the best one. I prefer how streamlined and short and compact the first game is. But in terms of like pure concept and how it's executed, I really, really love this game. And if you go back to our two-part browser series that we did for Retronauts, this is one of the very few non-sports slash fighting games where you can play as Bowser. Nintendo does not like you to do that outside of those contexts.
I think, for me, it's not my favorite. I think it's a completely reasonable pick for the best one. My only issue with this game is it's a 15-hour game, and the first 5 hours are so hand-holdy that it's like two-thirds great. But having said that, there's so much here I love mechanically, like the fact that, you know, because the Mario Brothers have been shrunk down and are inside Bowser's guts, they're on the bottom screen. They're inside, you know, and Bowser's on the top screen. That's very clever. I like that. The way that Bowser interacts with the world is called the fights where you turn the DS sideways like it's brain training.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really creative. And also it looks so good. The sprites are so good in this game.
Yeah, this is...
It's nuts.
The tail end of the great-looking sprite era for this series. And in terms of the pure concept here, Fawful returns... Mario and Luigi end up inside of Bowser, which really excites the Vore community online. People are way into that.
Bob.
I can't. Lord. No more talk about Vores or Mega Tokyo on this podcast. But,
that's fair enough.
The gameplay bounces back between Bowser and Mario and Luigi. Bowser is on the overworld, and Mario and Luigi are inside of him. And there's a lot of interplay between those two elements. Bowser has his own battle system where he operates differently. And then there are these boss fights starring Bowser where you turn your DS sideways in book mode and you fight these mega bosses. And it's the only time I did not mind breathing into my DS for a special attack.
Yeah, I also like how the Mario sections, the Mario and Luigi sections are all 2D. They're all 2D platforming.
That's right, yeah.
And that's just clever and cool. And also, what is interesting about it is this is almost, I mean, as you alluded to, this is a Bowser game. Mario and Luigi are like side characters. This is absolutely a Bowser game, and he gets more like in-game development and dialogue and characterization than I think he's ever had before or since, and it's just a joy. Like, once I get past that tutorial, that intro, it just takes off, and it's just like a rocket ride through this just fun. There's constantly something fun or cool or interesting or creative happening. Great game. This really great.
Yeah, Mario and Luigi essentially exist inside of a Metroid game, and then Bowser is in an RPG in a separate game. But there's they feed into each other so well. Mike, do you have any thoughts on this? Were you a big fan of this one?
You know what? I was a big fan of it. I probably couldn't tell you a lot about the story because I played it so long ago. What always struck me about this game, and going back to Super Mario RPG as well, was I love the characterization of Bowser as someone with a lot of confidence that screws up still.
Yeah,
like I think I like, you know, it's so easy to do an over-the-top villain or have Bowser just be evil or just, you know, the whole Princess Peach thing. I like that, like, these games actually, when I say give him a personality, that they don't just say like, here's the backstory of why he's evil, but they show a man who's frustrated that he's not getting enough respect.
Yeah.
And that to me is always such a great way to show a cartoon villain, someone who's like kind of super powerful and could kill everyone in the room, but just wants everyone to acknowledge that fact, and they will not.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on compared to Mario and Luigi. Sorry, Stuart, go ahead.
No, he'll flip between confidence and just, like, total insecurity, or just betray this kind of insecurity sometimes that makes him so much more just, like, funny and likable. I really love this one a lot. It doesn't get maybe enough respect, and it also introduces everyone's favorite Mario character of all time, Brock Monsieur.
Is he like a giant question mark block man? Like, what's his deal?
Yes,
with a mustache?
He's from France.
Okay.
And he's also got a dog that's called Brog, and there's also Brog Madame. I just like Brog Monsieur because it's a pun on Croque Monsieur. It makes me think about delicious sandwiches, and that's great stuff.
This one, yeah, it is, I feel like, the peak of the series. They could have just went out on this, and maybe it would have been for the best, but I just love the concept of how well they execute on it. Yes, it has a kind of a slow wind-up, but a lot of these games do, so it's just part of the RPG experience.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was a remake, which, like, unbelievably, came out in 2019, in January of 2019,
so
almost the second anniversary of the Switch. This is kind of Alpha Dream's last game, and it's like the last remake we talked about. It's technically pretty, it's competent, but the personality is kind of gone, or it's very lessened. It's not completely gone. And there's another bonus mode, which is essentially more of the auto battler RPG that we saw with the last remake. So don't play that.
Not to get all sort of Digital Foundry, bless them, but it's also 30 frames per second, and it's not 3D, and it's kind of like, what's going on here that means you can't have it run smoothly? I don't really get it. It doesn't seem that much better looking than the previous remake.
Yeah, I'm glad I guess some people got a chance to play this. Spoilers, this game sold terribly. I think it only received a physical release because Nintendo was publishing it. Otherwise, there would just be an eShop exclusive and that's it, like a lot of games of this era. But there are cartridges of it. They are very expensive now. There is no other way to play this legally if you didn't buy a cartridge or buy the eShop version of it.
It's if you do own a physical copy of it, again, hang on to it because that's your pension. That's going to be worth something for sure. I do like the fact that it exists because it kind of characterizes the last couple of years of the 3DS when Nintendo were just putting out like really surprisingly good, complete like feature packed games. I mean, this is not light on content at all. It's just that I suppose if you haven't played this game and you can get this, it's not a terrible version to play, but the DS version will probably end up on a DS expansion pass thing for the Switch 2 somehow. So
yeah. I mean, you could
maybe keep an eye out for that.
You could tell a lot of 3DS games were in development when they weren't sure. Like, well, people like the Switch. The Wii U was kind of a failure. And then it turns out it was a huge hit. And then all the 3DS games that launched in like 2017 to 2019, nobody cared. They received very little fanfare. And now they're very, very expensive. But you're right, Stuart. A lot of really cool games came out in that latter 3DS period that are now, unfortunately, very hard to access.
Yeah. A lot of, you know, Personas, a lot of RPGs, Kirby games, Yoshi's, Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World, which is amazing. Just great stuff.
Yeah, Kirby Planet Robobot. That's a 2016
game. Oh my god,
the
best Kirby game ever made.
I just played through it a few years ago, and I really, really liked it.
I've never played that. I need to play that now.
Super solid.
Yes, you do.
It's great. And I think Stuart...
Through legal means only.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you put
that
out
there. There is no other way to play it. What are you talking about?
I think, Stuart, you could be right. It could be the best 2D Kirby game since Kirby's Adventure, probably.
For me, it's the best one, but we'll save it for Kirby Part 6, I guess, if there's ever a Kirby Part 6.
They need to make more games, but I will gladly put together that a podcast.
Hell yeah.
So moving on, we're getting to the doldrums here, the bad era of Mario and Luigi with Mario and Luigi Dream Team for the 3DS, August of 2013. So this is their 3DS debut, and the last game was great. People don't seem that excited for this one. And this one has a reputation of being very talky, very hand-holdy, and we were reaching the period in which Nintendo was getting rid of those elements of their games. There's like kind of like a Wii U period where Nintendo is always reminding you, like, turn the game off, you've been playing too long, or do you need help with this level? That kind of goes away right after this, but we're kind of towards the end. And what I remember about this game, which I didn't play, is that Jeremy was reviewing it for US Gamer, and we were meeting for Retronauts recording 12 years ago at this point, and he was in such a bad mood because of this game.
Oh, yeah.
And all he wanted to do was complain about it, and that steered me far away from ever wanting to play it, although I did buy a copy in the 3DS's dying days just to have it, just because I knew it was going to be worth a lot of money. Did anyone play this one?
I did.
I own it, and I didn't play it.
I finished it, and thinking about the many years I've been playing video games, I think the game I regret bothering to finish the most is this one, and I'm not exaggerating. This game, I'm trying not to swear on this show anymore. I do not say this about Mario games, about Nintendo games, because I'm not an idiot. I can see the quality even in the games I don't like, you know? This sucks. This is a bad game. Mm. I really don't like this. And the most annoying thing about it is it looks and feels incredible again. But it's so long. It's about... I think I put about at least 65 hours into this, and I remember there's a point in the game where you are assembling this thing called the Ulti-Bed, like the ultimate bed. You have four pieces of the bed. You do four extremely big dungeons that go on forever and don't even have any interesting gimmicks. You get those four pieces, and I'm like, holy shit, finally. Oh, I said it. I said shit. God damn it. And I said, God damn it, this isn't going very well. Anyway.
You're in a spiral, Stuart. You're in a spiral.
I know, I really am. And I'm thinking, okay, great. There'll probably be one more final dungeon. I'm done. And then the story reveals, like, there's going to be at least four more dungeons. And I remember, I'm already, like, 30 hours into this game, and I remember just thinking, sunk cost fallacy, I've got to finish this. I've got to keep going. It's just garbage. I hate it so much. It's so boring. It's not even like funny bad. It's just so boring. And the tutorials in this never end all the way up to the finale. It's one of those ones where if you say, they say like, hey, do you want to learn about timed hits? And you say no, he'll be like, oh, well, I think you should, and then tell you anyway, as if that's funny. It's not funny. It's annoying. Yeah. There is nothing about this one that I liked. I know other people will disagree with that. I'm sure there are people who like this one. It's got a fun idea with the whole Dream Luigi thing. It's a cute idea, but it doesn't lead to anything interesting. I can't with this game. For me, it's the absolute pit of the series. It's the worst it ever got. I'm actually quite sad now, having had to relive some of it, but it's okay.
God, yeah. When I read your notes, Stuart, about playing 60 hours, my jaw hit the floor. I could not believe this game is that long.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I was rushing. Nah. I was rushing through this game to finish it.
I don't think we're annoying anyone with our comments here, because I've never heard anyone say, oh, you know what, that's kind of an overlooked gem, or there's some good stuff going on in the game. Nobody says anything good about this, because most people don't say anything about it. It kind of came and went. During the year of Luigi, this is the year of Luigi. It was a terrible year for Nintendo, a great year for Luigi, but this was meant to celebrate the character. And in concept, it seems really cool. It seems like they had another Bowser Inside story on their hands, because a lot of the game is Luigi is sleeping on the bottom screen. You interact with his face to sort of affect the level above you on the top screen, sort of like how there's interplay between bottom and top screen in the last game. But like you said, Stuart, the game will not leave you alone. The game does not trust you to play the game. And it just, all these tutorials, all of these word bubbles, it just wears you down, and then the game is too long.
It's the kind of game where you walk into a room, the game pans over to the thing you need to interact with, pans back slowly, and then tells you exactly what interaction you're going to have to make with it. It's just dreadful. I can't with this one.
So Stuart has the most experience here, and we are really slandering this game, but I don't think anyone's going to be mad. And I guess this bad game didn't meet sales expectations, so that was not a good move for Alpha Dream. And it looks like they had problems with the development of this game in terms of they're making something for a higher fidelity system that requires more resources. Even though we look at the 3DS and think it looks bad now, it was a big step up from the DS. So I feel like they are now encountering a new generation of hardware, and this is going to be their downfall, where the next game feels like a mix of used resources, and then they're kind of just doing remakes until the end. So I feel like they, like a lot of development studios, they couldn't make the jump to a new generation successfully. Yeah. And that brings us to their final game, Mario & Luigi Paper Jam. I will say, even though this is a mediocre game, I think it has a killer pun. This pun rules, because Paper Jam, it's the thing that you experience at your office when the paper won't come out of the printer and you got to go inside of it. But also, they're having a paper jam. They're dancing around, right? One of the guys is paper.
And then in the European version, they ruined it by calling it Paper Jam Bros. It's like, come on, guys.
What did they?
Dream Team Bros, Paper Jam Bros, come on.
Are there no paper jams in Europe, Stuart? Can you let us know?
I don't know. There is all kinds of jam over here in Europe, but not so much.
So
paper jams.
The concept is what it sounds like. Paper Mario, the distinct character, enters the world of Mario and Luigi. There's interplay between the mechanics. Conceptually, this is very good. But there's not a lot to the game outside of this gimmick. And things end up feeling a little flat and desperate, because we have these two ailing series that are kind of joining together to justify their existences, and you can kind of feel the sweat coming off of the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is... I don't hate this as much as I do the previous game, because I feel like the stuff that I like about Paper Mario has been brought into this, to the detriment of it for many other people, of course. There's a lot more focus on exploration in this game, and I mean like Paper Mario sticker star style exploration, which is like press A on everything and hope that there's something behind it, which for me, that's a big deal, but for everyone else, correctly probably, it's stupid and boring. But again, adding Paper Mario to like the battles just means that you spend a lot of time pressing Y 6 or 7 times, you know, to do 7 identical jumps. It's just... And also the areas you go in the game are really boring. It's like the first world is just like grass world, and then it's like desert world. There's no personality to any of it, unfortunately. That's what really brings it down for me. This is the only one I haven't finished, apart from Brothership, which we'll get to, but it's fine. It's just there's no reason to play it. really.
Yeah,
there's no big hook.
I reviewed this for US Gamer. I have no memories of it. I gave it a 4 out of 5, and I think now maybe like 3 out of 5 would be more appropriate, maybe 2.5 out of 5. I feel like I was just happy that they were forcing Paper Mario to be an RPG again in some respects. They couldn't make it too gimmicky, but you're right, Stuart. There's not a lot of personality to the game. And then the battles end up taking far too long because, like with Partners in Time, you're adding an extra element that just kind of adds on shoe leather to the battle experience. You're just doing a lot more actions over and over again. And when these games go wrong, the battles take way too long. You just kind of get bored of fighting the same things over and over.
When it goes right, you're still playing squash with an enemy for like a minute.
Yeah.
In the middle of a fight multiple times. And it's like, come on.
Did you have any experience with this one, Mike?
I did. I think the issue I ran into with it was it. I like Paper Mario and I like Mario and Luigi, and I think like when I heard about it, I was like, oh my god, these are two games I like, and they're put together. And then when I played it, I was like, okay, these are like two games I like put together. And for some reason, that was like it almost kind of felt like I didn't need it. It didn't quite justify its existence to me, and maybe that's because I'm somebody who like doesn't necessarily always love crossovers. You know, I'm somebody who's kind of like, I like when something stands on its own. Like, I didn't need, like, I love Paper Mario. I did not need someone to be like, and here's why Paper Mario is paper. And it's not that this game does that, but I also just don't necessarily need all my Mario worlds to overlap outside of something like Smash Brothers. And I think my attention fell off it pretty quick. I just kind of felt like it felt gimmicky to me in a way that felt more like the gimmick was more important than what the game was trying to do.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you don't really get the best of either series here, and like the one thing I'm going to credit for mainly is that it has one of the funniest jokes ever in a game, which is when Paper Peach escapes from the cage by just walking out of it casually, which is genuinely a good joke. But so much of this game you're just looking for toads, and I like looking for toads. I'll look for toads, but not all the time.
Yeah.
I want to do some actual puzzles, you know.
A big part of this game is toad hunt quests, which involve scrubbing old areas in order to find missing toads. And I remember these taking a lot of time when I was reviewing the game, and I looked up a compilation of the Toad Hunt quest on YouTube. It is 2 hours of the game, just finding toads and like yanking them out of bushes.
I don't even remember that part.
That's presumably also the player efficiently going directly to where the toads are. Jesus,
yeah,
that's
knowing
insane.
Where they all are ahead of time for the sake of like making a guide, essentially. But
that stuff is very late Paper Mario, and it does not fit here at all.
And one thing I notice about these games as we reach the end of our discussion is even if the games are bad, they start with what I feel like are genuinely cool concepts, like Mario and Luigi, Partners in Time. I don't like the baby, but adding like the child characters to the battle seems like it could work out, but it doesn't. And Dream Team, making the dream world where you interact with Luigi's face to alter the level seems fine, but they don't execute on it. In this game, it's a little more desperate, but it's like, sure, I want to see what Paper Mario can do in this world, but then they don't really execute on it well. So I feel like these games, the bad ones, always start with really good intentions, but something happens along the way that makes them fundamentally flawed.
I also wonder with something like Paper Mario, how much like oversight there was where they're like, no, well, Paper Mario doesn't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, they would not do that. You know, like having worked both at Nintendo and at many companies that have done crossover type things, there's so many cooks in the kitchen. There's so many opinions on how this character would act versus this character that I could imagine that being a giant impediment to making this game as good as it could be.
Yeah, sure. There might have been stricter rules about Paper Mario. Who knows?
Having the character of Paper Mario, who is, let's face it, he's a Paper Mario, you know, and the real personality from those games comes from your followers, from your helpers, your, you know, Goombella, for, you know, these really funny characters. And with this, the other characters are just like really toned down Mario and Luigi from Dream Team Bros, and it's just like, it's not, like I said, you lose the best of both series this way. It's just a shame that it didn't work.
Well, we're going to move on to the next and final game in the series for now, because the series seemed to be spiraling to death. Bad sequels, lackluster remakes, the company goes out of business. But then we have Mario and Luigi Brothership for the Switch, which came out in November of 2024, just this past year. And then it seems like people were like, no, this one isn't good either, and we're disappointed. That seems to be across the board general consensus. And Stuart, reading your notes, I remember that they don't even stick with the conceit that A jumps with Mario, B jumps with Luigi.
Yeah.
They screw it up completely.
I haven't played it.
They don't. I think, hands up, I actually really like what I've played of this, but it is so different to the previous games that a lot of people are instinctively going to rebel against it, which is fair enough. But, like, in the battles, A makes Mario jump, and it makes Luigi jump. But no, it's the other way around, I think. On the map, Luigi isn't directly controllable. He just follows you around like an automated NPC helper, which is just weird and wrong. You know, it's so against what you expect. But then in the battles, yeah, it's like A to select right and then A again. But when Luigi jumps on the enemy, the timed hit is still on B. So you're switching between A and B in a way that's so, like, unintuitive if you've played any other games in this series, that even, like, hours into this game, I was still screwing up inputs because I couldn't remember that you have to press A to select things for Luigi now. It's weird. I don't know why they did that. But when I muscled through that, I do think this is a big step up. I think it's probably not as good as Bowser's Inside Story, but the thing is, it's not like it. You're just going to all these different islands that have a bunch of actual sort of fun exploration things to find in them. It has a good soundtrack. It has interesting characters that you meet, fun characters. It's not like crazy off the wall like the early games, but it is not just Toads anymore. And the fact that it does have the visual bump to the Switch is nice. It means that they can branch out a bit and have different kinds of gimmicks and different kinds of worlds to visit. I like it. I think a lot of people wouldn't. I think the fact that there are load times on the battles hurts it quite badly, because you really don't want to be... I mean, the battles take long enough anyway in these games that you really don't want to be watching loading as well. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I think that this is a very real step up from the others. It's just that I wouldn't say run out and buy a copy now unless it's, you know, desperate. It's not a bad game, I don't think. You have to kind of get through the initial... they have totally screwed these controls up.
Like, yeah, that seems like... I don't know what they were thinking there, because the games try to hardwire you to thinking, no, this button is always Mario, this button is always Luigi, but to swap that around feels like a weird issue, but...
Not even just swap that around, but swap it around and then sometimes decide, actually, no, it is that now.
I guess they couldn't decide. I bought this game because I wanted to support the series, a series I have some fondness for, but I want to say, like, the past 18 months have been crazy for video game releases. Like, there's just so much new good stuff coming out. Now the Switch 2 is coming out, so... I don't know when I'll get around to this, but I do want to give it a try, because I feel like it has to be better than Paper Jam and Dream Team. I feel like maybe there's more enthusiasm on the development side to try to make this work again. But across the board, I have not seen a lot of enthusiasm in general.
It's definitely better than those two games, easily. It has performance issues. It has loading issues. But it's definitely a step up. It's not going to bring the series back to prominence, I don't think, though. It's just not quite there. But it's a step up. It's also less tutorially. You can actually get around the tutorials in this game. But to be honest, because they've changed all the controls, you probably shouldn't.
They actually let you say no this time, and they believe you. Like, actually, we know better.
It has this kind of fun idea of the fact that you're on islands, and the islands are kind of like moving, that you have to sort of plan and plot where exactly you can and can't go at any given time, because the environment's going to be shifting around you, and it's just that little bit more engaging, so you're not just going from grass world to dunes world to whatever. It'll be like, I can't get to this island right now, but I have this new power now, so I can go back to this island and I can maybe collect some of the stuff I wasn't able to get before. And some people will hate that, because it means you can't do what you want at any point, you know,
right?
And that's a problem for a lot of players, I get that, but for me, I was just kind of like, hell yeah, I'm a freak, let's go. I had a lot. I liked this, and I will go back to it, but unfortunately other cool games came out. So
it just was surrounded by so many better games that I bought it, and it came and went, and I realized, like, oh, this is on my Switch, and it's been there for like 8 months. But yeah, that has been our Mario and Luigi discussion. Before we go here, I want to ask everybody, what do you think the future of Mario-based RPGs will be, or what should it be? And my own thoughts are, you know, Origami King was a step in the right direction. There's still things in that game I don't like. I like Paper Mario getting closer to being an RPG again. Mario and Luigi, I don't know if there's a future there, because people don't seem to care anymore. So my proposition is, we make a third Mario RPG branch, a tactics game, and we can forget about the rabbits thing, because I don't want to look at those guys. Let's have Mario Fire Emblem. That's all I'm going to say. I want to do that now as the next Mario RPG. We can have a third brand and see how that goes. Those are my thoughts. Mike, any thoughts on this?
Honestly, I would, despite being a fan of the Mario and Rabbids game, I do agree that the worst part are the rabbits.
Yeah, the gameplay's fine.
Gameplay's great. I would love to see, a tactical Mario game. I do think that, knowing Nintendo, they're a company that doesn't like giving up on things. And so I could see, I definitely see a Paper Mario in our future, just because I think no matter how those perform, Nintendo likes those. Oh, yeah. And then I bet it's going to be, we're going to get another brothership in that, like, in 10 or 15 years, we're going to be like, oh, a new Mario and Luigi game. Wow. We haven't seen that in a while. And then it'll come out and you'll be like, did anyone play it? And people will be like, yeah, I heard it was fine. Like, I feel like that will have.
It's going to be eternally.
We'll definitely have a Paper Mario series.
Eternally a 7 out of 10 for most people, the series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Outside of a few standouts. Stuart, how about you?
I think that following Super Mario Bros. Wonder, now that Nintendo has actually seen fit to break Mario out of some of the molds he's been in for the last, like, 10 years, mm-hmm. I feel like we could get something completely new in the RPG mold, and that's what I would like to see. I'm a sicko. I would like another Paper Mario that's just about walking around and hitting things with a hammer and hoping coins come out. I would like that. I mean, I would like a Sticker Star remake. I'm sorry. I really would like a Sticker Star remake. There's so much they could shave off the edges of that.
Fair.
But
yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's not going to happen, I don't think. But I think we're going to get something new, and it's going to be cool, and everyone on the internet is just going to complain about it.
Yeah, in general, I'll say get these 3DS games on something else so people can play them, because people just can't play them
great.
Now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't play Dream Team again. They can go to hell, but yeah.
If like, we can make it a form of punishment, like if you steal a car, you have to finish Dream Team or something like that.
Yeah.
Creative sentencing.
I wouldn't be too surprised if we got, like, Super Paper Mario remade, because it doesn't... I mean, the Wii Pointer stuff is not exactly, like, impossible to recreate with a touchscreen. Yeah. And that was a pretty good game, I thought. I thought people generally
I'd like to
that
give
one.
It another chance, I think. But it is...
It was kind of weirdly nihilistic Mario game, wasn't it? It was kind of weird and sick and gross, and that was cool.
Yeah, I kind of like the concept, but I'm not sure how well it figured out. But
maybe we'll get a Paper Mario 1 remake. That would be
cool. That'd be cool. I might prefer that to the second game, actually, now that I've replayed the second game.
I think a lot of people who came back to that remake of the second game had this kind of realization of, like, oh, wait, this isn't a masterpiece. It's just real good.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, this was not as good as I remembered, but I still enjoyed my time with it, even though I had COVID. It helped me get through the COVID, gave me something to do. But yeah, that has been our Mario and Luigi discussion. This has been an episode of Retronauts, by the way, in case you forgot. And I've been your main host, Bob Mackey. And you can find us on Blue Skies Retronauts. And if you want to support the show, get these episodes ad-free. And also get access to, I think over at this point, 100 bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up for $5 a month. Again, you get ad-free episodes 1 week at a time. And you also get access to two full-length bonus episodes every month, and at this point, since we started in early 2020, there are now over 100 bonus episodes that you haven't heard if you're not a patron at patreon.com/retronauts. And that is it for Retronauts. I'll talk about my plugs last. Let's talk about Mike and what Mike's up to. Mike has a new book that's just freshly out on store shelves and
freshly out
on digital shelves too.
Yep, Good Game, No Rematch. Ostensibly, it's been reviewed well. A funny book of comedy essays about video games, available now. Digital, hardcover, audio. I read the audiobook, available wherever books are sold. If you're in the UK, it's coming July 3rd. We had a small hiccup that delayed it a little bit, but July 3rd, it'll be out there. And please buy it.
And Stuart, how about you?
I have a book. It's not new, though. It's been out for a while. It's called All Games Are Good. And, you know, it's got a spirited defense of Sticker Star in there. It's about my disgusting upbringing where I was playing all the wrong games all the time and going, wow, I love this, even though everyone else didn't. It's a very sincere contrarian book, though, because I don't consider myself contrarian. I consider myself to be mad and like, wrong, but in a way that works for me. So, yeah, please buy that. And also, you can hear me on Retronauts a bunch, and you can find me on, like, Blue Sky, Stuart Jip, but I don't recommend that because I talk a lot of shit on there.
And as for me, Bob Mackey, once again, you can find me on Blue Sky, a bunch of other things as Bob Servo. I also do Talking Simpsons. It's a podcast about The Simpsons going strong for 10 years now. Check it out wherever you find podcasts, or go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Sign up there for early episodes that are ad-free, and also podcasts about Futurama, King of the Hill, Batman the Animated Series, The Critic, and Mission Hill. We've covered so many episodes of those, as well as The Simpsons. But that is it for this episode of Retronauts. We'll see you again very soon for another episode. Take care.